So joining us now on the show, of course, you know him, you love him, Randy Gisarelli from The Ringer. First of all, Randy, I just want to say happy anniversary. Today is 2-2. What'd you do to celebrate the anniversary of Super Bowl Live?
Well, I watched highlights of Patrick Mahomes play like I do pretty much every day. So I guess not really a special day.
Yes, great choice. Of course, you have had some absolute bangers writing for The Ringer, and you were telling us before we got to recording here that you might have something in the hopper for pre-Super Bowl.
The Chiefs keep winning. I'll keep writing. The Ringer, you know, they're certainly not complaining about more Chiefs content. So, yes, I have something hopefully in the pipeline for next week, the Super Bowl week. And then if they do happen to win the Super Bowl, perhaps something after that, we will see.
They will certainly be a topic of conversation for everybody in the sports world. So that'll be
like it or not, the Chief, you know, whether you want to read Chiefs content or not, it will be there for you. And if we get to the point where people are sick and tired of the Chiefs, as I know many football fans are, tough.
Yeah, you know, people get tired of greatness. That's just kind of, you know, everybody hates on the teams that win all the time. But if you are a fan of the team that wins all the time, you don't care at all. So we are certainly fortunate that they're giving us reason to sit here on a February morning and not talk about the draft or what offseason moves we're going to have or any of that stuff. So it's
I still have to talk about the Royals once a week.
There you go. Yeah, Kaufman Corner. Go check him out on all your podcast apps. Good. That's great coverage of the Royals.
The Royals keep me humble. That's being a fan of, you know, it's not all peaches and roses and flowers.
They keep us all humble.
Sure. Yes, but they also paid us off pretty recently.
It's been an incredible decade. I mean, I look back at where we were basically 10 years ago, almost exactly, right? But, I mean, everything changed the moment the Chiefs hired Andy Reid and the Royals traded Will Myers in a 3-week stretch. It was, I think, 10 years ago this past month.
Yeah,
December. And, it's been a hell of a decade. I'm not sure the Royals can replicate what they did, but the Chiefs have built a machine here. They built a well-oiled organization, and we can talk about that in the future. We got a Super Bowl to prepare for, but you know, win or I think the best thing we can say about the upcoming Super Bowl is that win or lose, like, we all feel, I think, extremely positive about the Chiefs being in this same position potentially a year from now and maybe 2 years from now. This was the rebuilding year. This is the rebuilding year. Yeah. They're 16-3 and going to the Super Bowl. So I don't know, you know, how much more we could ask for than that.
It is absurd. Before I get into the questions, I wanted to ask you, this talk of the Chiefs being a well-oiled machine just kind of brought me back to some research I did earlier today where Patrick's 10 playoff wins. I looked back at every franchise to see how far back they have to go.
That and was highly, highly amused.
Oh, so good. There's only 12 teams that even have had 10 since 2000. There's only 12 of them in the NFL out of 32. And I mean, you've got the Chiefs and would have to go back obviously to his first win in 19, but then New England would have to go back to 2015, San Francisco to 13, Green Bay to 11. That's the top four. That's the top four teams. So like,
yeah, my favorite is the ones where you can go back
the bottom
forever.
The Browns 1954. Yeah. That's pretty rough. They had their 10th playoff win ago was in 1954, Atlanta 1978, the Chargers 1982. Cincinnati's only had 10 wins in Bengals history.
I was going to say, like, Patrick Mahomes has more wins than the Detroit Lions in their history.
Yeah.
Arizona Cardinals in their history. But if he wins the Super Bowl, he'll have more than the Cincinnati Bengals have ever had.
Yep.
And seeing as how the Bengals have suddenly become our number one rival, apparently, here. That just feels like dunking on them a little bit more. And
can't get
a better man than me would not want to dunk on a team that's down right now, but I'm not a better man.
If I may interject very quickly, because I actually did look this up and I am not above this. I said yesterday that I was on to Philadelphia and I was going to stop harassing Bengals fans on Twitter, but I'm not. Not only does Patrick Mahomes currently have the same number of playoff wins as the Cincinnati Bengals, he also has the same number of Super Bowl appearances. He obviously has more Super Bowl wins because that franchise is ringless.
Yeah,
he has the same number. Yeah. He has the same number of 12 win seasons. By the way, the Bengals have 4 in their franchise history. And Patrick Mahomes also has 4, or I guess it's only 5-5.
No, he went 11-3. The
that's the that's one right, year. That's right. Yeah. So, or
well, yeah, and he has more conference championship game appearances.
More conference championship game appearances, and the Bengals have never won more than 12 games in their entire history. So he has more 13-plus win seasons than the entire franchise of Cincinnati. All right, I'm out.
Thank you for dunking. That was perfect. Okay,
but you do know that if he had lost last week, Joe Burrow would have been a better quarterback. That's what everyone was telling.
I heard that.
Randy, save it for the end. We're going to talk. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
So, well, I want to take us back to pregame of this monumental matchup between the Bengals and the Chiefs that we had been worrying about and talking about all the implications and all that for a week. So, Kelce pops up on the injury report on Friday with a little back spasm on the second to last snap, and that just throws Chiefs Kingdom into a tizzy for all of Friday night, all of Saturday, all Sunday morning, trying to figure out, you know, if Kelce doesn't go in this game and they're already, you know, Pat's got banged up and everything, then it wasn't going to look good. But, you know, he comes out in warmups and he's going to give it a go and he's running around and sprinting. How were you mentally as a fan prepping, you know, in this game? Where were your nerves at? Were you excited? Was it like, oh my God, I can't believe it's happening? Where were you at?
Well, where I was at with Kelce, I think since that injury report, I was firmly in a state of denial. You know, I was just like, no, that can't be. That Travis Kelce cannot miss this game. And thankfully he did not. He's Travis Kelce. And I mean, it's kind of weird to think that, you know, the year he was drafted, he, you know, missed the entire season. And then I think I'm not sure if he's missed a game due to injury. I know he sat out one game because they had clinched the number one seed. But yes, to see that was like somebody had like torn through the fabric of reality a little bit. It did not jibe with my understanding of how the universe works. So I just ignored it.
Yeah.
But I didn't need Kelce's availability to be in question in order to be just absolutely terrified about this game.
We
talked about it. I mean, like, yes, the joy of beating the Bengals was going to be immense. But the specter of losing to them for a fourth straight game and a second straight AFC championship game at home would have just been intolerable, because not just the loss, not just missing out on another Super Bowl, but just the narrative that had already started to form would have just been crystallized permanently. And I would have had to unplug from the all NFL talk for like the next 9 months, I think.
Yeah. It would have been a tough battle back to that point where people wouldn't be talking about that every time Mahomes came up. I mean, it would have been as devastating to our truth, which we understand to be correct, which is that he's the greatest player in NFL history. That would have just thrown that whole thing for a loop. So I completely agree with you. Everything was on the line for that. I was a nervous wreck. I was up all night. I was pacing before the game. I was super quiet. Austin and I, we went to the game. We were sitting in my car in the parking lot. And at one point he just looked over at me and he goes, "Are you okay?" Cause I was just like zoned out, just like, I mean, in a state. So I was as happy as anybody to have the kickoff finally happen and to at least get locked in and have plays go on and not just worry about the game. And of course, early on, you know, things were looking pretty good for the Chiefs. They took a 10-point lead on a 4th-and-1 touchdown pass to Kelce. The defense was getting home, which was a massive key to this game, with 3 first quarter sacks on Burrow and another one in the second quarter. What'd you think about the energy that they came out with and kind of how they matched up early on with the Bengals in this one?
Well, so I tried to keep myself distracted before, because it was a late game, right? Which is kind of a mixed blessing. But in my case, it worked out well. My daughter had a birthday party planned for 1 o'clock. So it would have been.
You had plenty to do.
Yeah, I had plenty to do and plenty to keep my mind up. But, you know, while they were, the kids were doing laser tag or whatever it was that they were doing, like, they had TVs on. And for whatever reason, the TVs at this place didn't have, like, network television. They had NFL Network on. They were showing a replay of the Chiefs Bengals regular season game. So my first reaction, I get the kids all situated. I look up at the TV and I see Chiefs Bengals.
Arrowhead.
A very brief moment of panic where I'm like, did I get the times of the game?
That's hilarious.
Why are we looking so bad? Why does this look so familiar to me?
Yeah.
So I was fortunately fairly distracted and then went over to my brother's as we had watched two of the other AFC Championship games, but we had actually never watched the Chiefs win one. The two that they won, I was in Colorado for one of them, and we were actually in attendance for the Titans game.
Perfect.
And how delightful is it? We can just talk about all these different AFC Championship games. just like a deck of cards that you're just pull one out.
Right. Which AFC Championship of the five have you been to?
Very specific.
Yeah.
But the game before the game, I'll tell you what, I was a bag of nerves, but part of the nervousness, of course, was not just that the Chiefs could lose, but how many quote unquote pundits and experts were predicting the Chiefs to lose. And actually, I would say the majority of people were predicting Chiefs to lose. I took some solace from the fact that the people, I don't want to name too many people, but the pundits who I consider to be negative indicators, as in like if they predict team A to win, it's actually makes me think team B is more likely to
like
win.
Like a Skip Bayless or someone.
Like a Skip Bayless. Yes.
You just don't respect their opinion. Yeah.
I not only do not respect their opinion, but they literally know they know less than the monkey. Right.
Yeah.
So those people seem to all be predicting the Bengals to win. Whereas some of the analysts, some of the cold, dispassionate, math and numbers, my kind of people, the nerds, who could take a step back and actually analyze this without the emotion, without using, psychology that none of us really are in a position to know, we're saying actually the Chiefs probably are slightly better team. Of course, there's the issue of nobody knew just what Patrick Mahomes would look like. But I felt like going into the game, all the people who were predicting a Bengals victory were focusing on, Mahomes being limited in his mobility.
Yeah, they thought he was human.
Which classic mistake, classic right up mistake. There with starting a land war in Asia. But the point being is that like the defensive line of the Bengals was going to come after the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this a little bit last week, but I did feel like the Bengals' performance against the Bills, shockingly good performance on the offensive line, had caused people to sort of forget that they were playing three, backups out of five on their offensive line. And as Chiefs fans know, you can have a great team and make it deep into the playoffs, but at some point, if your offensive line is falling apart, and the other team's got a couple of good players on their line, it's going to be a problem. Yeah. And I felt like that was something the pundits just were kind of ignoring, was that, yes, they held up well against a Bills pass rush, which without Von Miller was kind of mediocre.
And slipping in the snow.
But yeah, and slipping in the snow. We talked about that too, and I do think that played a part. But the point being is the Bills don't have Chris Jones.
Nope.
And the Chiefs have Chris Jones. And that, to me, and yes, he had never had a sack in a postseason game, but that wasn't actually, I think, a fair reflection of how well he's played in the postseason, because there's a lot more he can do than just get a sack. If he's, eating up double teams and letting Frank Clark get in there and get sacks, he's providing value, and he's done that, and he's hit quarterbacks in the process of throwing and caused interceptions, and he's deflected pass. He's done all sorts of things.
Three years ago tonight, he deflected two late game passes against the Niners and, shut their whole offense down. So,
and he has been the closer all season on defense. I mean, he's been great. So going into this game, I really felt like Chris Jones could be the difference maker that all these people are forgetting about. So during the national anthem, a admittedly very stirring rendition of the Star-Spangled Banner by General Wilson.
Who's a pro.
He's a pro and a beautiful rendition. And Chris Jones, a single tear dropped from his, I think his left eye, just rolled down his cheek. And they show that on the screen. And I'll tell you guys, I was like, oh shit.
You knew.
Chris Jones is in his feels right now.
Uh-huh.
And I felt a little, I'm like, at that moment, everything we thought we knew, that the Chiefs, because all week the Bengals were trash talking, the Bengals were about Burrowhead, the Bengals were about send those refunds, and the Chiefs were you know, this was an Andy Reid clinic, right? Professional. Justin Reid didn't mouth off like he did before the first game. He didn't realize that's not what we do in Kansas City. You know, I think it was someone as good at the trash talk as Frank Clark was saying something like, you know, it's not a rivalry because we haven't beaten them yet, right?
Chris Jones said that, and I loved it.
Oh, was it Chris Jones?
Yeah, yeah.
It was Chris Jones.
Loved it.
But you hear that, but, you know, they were saying all the right things, but you knew this game mattered more to these guys. You knew that rippling under the surface of that placid exterior that we all suspected they were on a mission.
Yep.
And all that emotion was bottled up inside Chris Jones and out squeezed this one tiny tear. And when I saw that, I'm like, these boys, they are ready. They are emotionally, you know, prepared. They have vengeance on their mind. Chris Jones let Joe Burrow slip out of his grasp twice in the fourth quarter in the AFC Championship game last year. I saw that. I'm like, that's not happening tonight.
No.
And I felt like at that moment, at least, I felt like, okay, the defense is on point. And they came out, like you said, they came out very strong. Mm-hmm. And Chris Jones got his first sack early in the game. And I felt great about that. But I didn't feel great about the Chiefs having to settle for a field goal on their first two possessions.
Yeah.
You know, you think either one of those is a touchdown. 10-point lead early on, I feel great. 6-0, it's like a touchdown, and they're
down
the lead.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Bengals can get the lead with a touchdown. So it definitely felt like missed opportunities. They were playing well, but they, you know, this is the Bengals' MO and they could come back. And then you had that final drive at the end of the first half, where the Chiefs had the ball with like in Bengals territory with something like 220, 230 on the clock, somehow ran three plays and took so little time off the clock that even after running three plays and punting, the Bengals got the ball back on the far side of the 2-minute warning with 2:03 left. So they were able to run some extra plays.
After the Jalen Watson pick, which was such a nice pick, and you figured, you know, at that point, the Chiefs were going to go into half up 20-3 or something. It was 13-3 then, and they had the ball driving. And you just thought, oh, this is where they put them away. And yet, like you said, three incompletions, didn't move the ball at all, gave it to them on the other side of the 2-minute warning. And that's how you let good teams back in games.
Well, especially when, you know, Legarius Sneed's already out of the game with a concussion. And I think at that point was Juju, I think, had already...
Yep, had already checked out.
Had already checked out. We didn't really know what was going on. I don't think... Mm-hmm. I feel like he was the one player we didn't really get much of a report on as to what happened. Whereas Legarius, you saw it, and it looked bad. And, you know, for his sake, for
multiple Tony reasons, had already gone down.
Okay. It was Tony out of the game at this point, I think.
Yeah, because it was like his first catch early that he had that weird kind of collapsed on
The ankle. Yeah. I don't know. It felt like there was something wrong with the field.
Could have been,
guys were slipping and... So here you are. It's like we're clearly the better team on the field, but the score does not represent that. And we're now down another couple of really good players, and they've got the ball. And, you know, here they are marching down the field in a 2-minute drill, and it looked like they were going to tie the game. Make the game a 3-point game.
Right.
And, you know, what happens, you know, on second and goal with like 8 seconds left, Chris Jones gets pressure, forces a quick throw to T. Higgins that was incomplete, and they had to settle for the field goal. And, you know, it's interesting because, like, looking back, I think everybody at the time thought, oh, you know, field goal makes sense. You know, it was third and goal from the 5-yard line with 4 seconds left.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, conservative, you know, you don't want to go for the touchdown. Well, I think the Bengals, if they had that opportunity again, they go for the touchdown there, the entire game is different. So just another case for analytics and the argument of being much more aggressive in scoring opportunities.
And another massive play at the end of half between these two teams after last year with the Chiefs screwing up on the goal line. I mean, that's a really big switch there either way.
Yeah, it was. It was kind of poetic that, you know, they ended up having to settle for that. Mm-hmm. But we're up by a touchdown. And I thought, okay, we come out and we score a touchdown on that first drive of the third quarter. I'll feel really good.
Agreed. Yeah, and back up basically, 14 at that point would have been awesome.
And then from the moment they went three and out until Until Sky Moore fields that punt, I don't think I felt like the Chiefs were going to win the game at any point in the second half. Even though that no point in this game were they actually trailing. But just from the moment they went three and out, it's just like, and then the Bengals immediately come down and score a dying touchdown. I just thought, okay, I've seen this movie before. We're, you know, we've got half a team out on the field right now, half a quarterback, half a team, and the Bengals are going to find a way to rip our heart out again. And that's just the way it felt.
Yeah, and half a team. I mean, we talked about Juju and Tony, but Hardman and Gay were also out along with Snead. So, I mean, they were dropping like flies, and the Chiefs were running out Marcus Kemp on offense, which was insane. I mean, a practice squad wide receiver in the AFC Championship game. And Sky Moore, who, you know, has had some run at wide receiver this year. It's not like he had no snaps, but he certainly wasn't, you know, prepared to go in to get that game and play as much as he did. But I guess I say he wasn't prepared. He absolutely was prepared because they ran an offense. They somehow were able to piece that thing together without all those guys. I guess I also want to talk about Marquez Valdes-Scantling. I mean, with all the injuries to the wide receivers, and obviously the Bengals had made a considerable effort to take Travis Kelce out of the game as much as they could, as much as anyone really ever can. And they had all the signs in their facility about, did you hit Travis Kelce today? And like, I mean, they clearly knew that he was the focal point before all these wide receivers went out. So Marquez Valdes-Scantling comes out and has the best game he's had as a pro and was absolute money and on the right page with Pat, which we haven't always seen. Is this team maybe deeper than a lot of people, maybe including Chiefs Kingdom, gave it credit for going into this game? Like, they don't get this done without that depth, do they?
I think they are, but I think specifically when it comes to the wide receiver depth, I'm not sure that they're deeper than people thought, or that Patrick Mahomes is, like I've said before, well, however good you think he is, he's actually better than that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's great.
Because like Marcus Kemp, it's an incredible story. It's amazing that a guy had literally 4.5, I think, years of being on the Chiefs roster, you know, off and on the back practice squad, had 4 career receptions.
Yeah.
In 24 tackles, career, 24 tackles, but 4 receptions.
Yeah.
And I tweeted this out like in the third quarter, it was clear that, well, I think it was after Hardman went down, that I'm like, are we really going to have to see Marcus Kemp make a reception in this game?
And he did.
And sure enough, he did. But is Marcus Kemp, when you talk about depth, is he really that much better than a practice squatter on some other organization?
No.
Or is it just that Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid scheming things up can get Marcus Kemp free in an important situation and get a 13-yard reception? I think it's more that. I would talk about the depth more on the defensive side.
Sure.
After Legarius Sneed, I mean, your best cornerback goes down. He's out for the game. And what an incredible testament to the organization and to their drafting ability. And their development, that 3 rookies, okay, and Trent McDuffie, fine, first round pick, I think they moved up to draft,
right?
And is really, you know,
blue chip guy, yeah,
a blue chip guy. You know, at the time, I was skeptical that, because they gave up something like a third round value to move up like 5 or 6 picks to make sure to get him, and I was skeptical that any cornerback would be worth giving up that extra value. He's been sensational. I mean, he wasn't healthy, you know, he got injured like everyone else in on Arizona's hard turf, and we're going back there in 10 days. Ever since he's come back, I mean, he's been phenomenal. But to put Jalen Watson, 7th round pick, and Joshua Williams, 4th round pick, and those 3 guys are going up against one of the best receiving duos in the entire sport, in Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, and they shut them down. That to me is an incredible testament to this organization is more than Patrick Mahomes. That this is a team that is knows how to identify talent, draft it, develop it, doing so, you know, with guys who are on rookie contracts, and that frees up money to spend at other places. If you want to talk about reasons for optimism, this organization is going to continue to be a consistent winner in year in and year out. Beyond Patrick Mahomes, it's going to be if they can find cheap guys to surround Patrick Mahomes with, that frees up so much salary cap space to actually go out and add stars and you know, sign stars as free agents to surround Mahomes with.
Yeah.
What those guys did, I can't say enough about that. But Marquez Valdes-Scantling, I mean, yes, that was he earned his contract on one single drive, really. The drive ended with him scoring
with that touchdown. Stretch for the first down.
Oh. That was phenomenal.
It was.
And, you know, but that right there, the awareness, because, I mean, there's a risk there. You put your arm out and the ball gets knocked away. Fourth and inches, are they going for it there? Probably. But right. Andy Reid has shown kind of annoying, you know, tendency to be conservative in playoff situations more so than I think in the regular season.
And they're bad in short yardage.
Yeah. Well, that too. I mean, you know, they to the point where on fourth and one, they go into, you know, a 13 formation, which I thought was great. And, you know, the two short options are not open. And so on fourth and one, Patrick Mahomes throws to the end zone. Anyone else, and that's just an insane, just the risk reward on that is crazy. Uh-huh. But it's Patrick Mahomes throwing to Travis Kelce. But, you know, and that's beautiful. But that point is that, like, the Chiefs are such a bizarre offense in that third and one seems to be less likely to convert than third and eight. So I don't know what they would have done there. But Valdes-Scantling, the awareness, it's not like it's reaching for the end zone where the line is literally painted on the field.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you know, it's easy for us to do that. And you guys, you guys didn't have the yellow line on the TV screen. Right. Were you even aware when he first got the ball that he was a yard short?
Like, I only was aware by seeing it on the big screen that they showed it after, because they obviously took a good look at this. And so I, when he caught it, he was going away from us from where our seats were. And so I didn't really see the stretch, but then they showed the replay immediately because we challenged that one, right? I believe. Yeah, we did.
Yes, that was the one they challenged. Even then it wasn't clear to me that it was going to be, you know, overturned. It was very close. But the point is, without him lunging for, without him having the awareness of where he was compared to the sticks, there's no way. So
football players are just built different. The way that they know where they are on the field at all times. I mean, so many of those guys, you see them do that, fight for every inch that they barely get a first down. And you're like, how did you know where you were? It's something else.
But it's also a testament. It's his first year in Kansas City, so maybe he's always been this heady a player. But that's the sort of move I would expect from a tight end, like a Travis Kelce or a Juju Smith-Schuster as a possession receiver. He's the deep threat.
Uh-huh. You know,
he's the deep threat.
Yeah. How many times do you think he's ever looked over to the side and seen the first down marker? Right. I mean, most of the time he's 30 yards past it.
Right. To have that awareness, given his skill set and the way he's normally used, that spoke really well of him.
Well, Austin and I were just talking about how he probably was running a lot of routes that weren't his routes, that when Juju and Tony and those guys were out, you know, they elevate everybody, kind of moves up the line. And I mean, he was running wide receiver one routes and he was running Tony routes with the orbit route and stuff. I mean, he was definitely doing his fair share of heavy lifting on the offense. It was great. Another good pickup by Veach there where, you know, you're not quite sure. You squint and see it maybe work out, but it doesn't quite crystallize until a moment like this. And obviously he was huge there. So the Chiefs had no running game, really. I mean, the backs were good out of the backfield catching the ball, but they really couldn't get anything going on the ground. Their wide receivers were dropping like flies. That's still an offense. Somehow they had three tight ends a lot of times, and two of the tight ends would be playing the wide receiver positions. I mean, Fortson and Gray played more wide receiver, I felt like, than tight end in that game. They were multiple. They all kind of have jobs that they can fill in when other people go down. Really, you can tell that the offense is so well coached. Not only are these guys good football players, but like they had plans. They knew exactly what they were doing out there. The coaching staff, I don't know if maybe because the Chiefs have some superstars and Kelce and Pat and all that stuff, if maybe the coaching staff gets kind of lost in the shuffle sometimes. But I mean, these guys really, really set them up for success, don't they?
The Chiefs have, I was thinking about this, is the Chiefs right now between, you know, Reid obviously is the head coach, but with Bieniemy and Spagnuolo, having both been in the spots that they are in for, what, 4 years now?
I mean, since 18. Well, Spags was 19.
Since 19. And so Bieniemy might be even longer.
And Bieniemy was 18. So, 5 and 4 years.
I mean, they are as well, you know, the coaching situation for this organization right now is as strong as, you know, it's ever been. Mm-hmm. They know what they're doing. We'll get to Sky Moore and what he did. And that's another testament to, you know, incredible coaching. But I mean, every aspect, the training staff, I mean, obviously, you know, getting Patrick Mahomes back on the field and Travis Kelce. I mean, we saw it after the game, the Chiefs themselves and Mahomes were tweeting out, the, you know, information and pictures of the athletic trainers. Julie, I believe is her name.
Pat talked about it after the game.
She basically, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day, you know, working with him to get his ankle in a position to play. A separate athletic trainer who got Travis Kelce's back, you know, in position to go out there. So, you know, every aspect of this organization right now, you really feel you have confidence in. I want to give us a special shout out to Mecole Hardman also.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, think about
it, this guy who is, you know, in what may be his final year with the Chiefs. I mean, it's mm-hmm. essentially a contract year. It's, you know, he will be a free agent at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. For him to, you know, be out since week 9 with an mm-hmm. abdominal injury. They never specified exactly what it was, but, and, you know, he's been week to week for like a month now, but to finally
special.
Get back. Yeah, exactly. To Andy Reid, you know, we'll just see how it goes. And it's just every week and every week.
Thanks, Andy.
They had to know. Exactly. They had to know this was gonna take a while, but for him to work his ass off to get back, and he was almost ready for the Jaguars game, but we didn't really need him for that game. So, you know, he was able to come back for this game mm-hmm. and then to re-injure that abdomen. And now, you know, Andy Reid has said he doesn't feel optimistic that Hardman will be ready for the Super Bowl. This may have been the only game he played. He made, you know, he had two rushes, he had two catches, one of them for negative yards, but the one catch that was an 11-yard reception on third down.
Yeah.
On a drive where the Chiefs scored a touchdown in a game they won by 3 points.
That's good perspective. Like,
that one catch when the Chiefs desperately needed it in the third quarter. Third and four, it was a third down play. He made an 11-yard catch. That's the catch he got injured on. But, you know, when a guy breaks a bat and gets a bloop single, you know, the bat died a hero.
That's right.
Mecole Hardman didn't die, but, you know, he went out of the game a hero.
That's perfect.
And I mean, frankly, I would like to see if it's possible to bring him back, just because the idea of having both him and Tony healthy just for one game.
Very appealing.
So if we could just get both of those guys healthy on the field
sure.
for one game in the backfield, you know, and you put one in motion. I just want to see that.
Could get one of them healthy for one game, that'd be a great start.
Yes. Yeah. That would be great. But I just want to make it, you know, a special shout out. Like he worked his butt off, and even with all that, he barely contributed, but that contribution made all the difference in the world.
Well, and he's one of the handful of Chiefs that actually was there in 19 that's actually won a Super Bowl. And I say handful, you know, it's been 3 years. And a lot of times you think like, oh, the Chiefs have been there. The Chiefs are champions and all this stuff. But of the 53-man roster, I think my head count was 16 that were actually on the 19 53-man roster. And, you know, Hardman was a part of that offense. And to lose him going into this game, potentially lose him going into the Eagles game is just it's a blow. It's definitely a blow. He offers some stuff that, you know, that I think the Chiefs would hope that Tony would offer, but doesn't quite yet. And I think the offense is a better offense when he's out there. So I'd love to see him bring him back too. I think, you know, they got stuff worked out with guys like DeMarcus Robinson before, where if they don't have a huge market, like if someone's going to go pay Mecole Hardman $14 million a year or whatever, like, yeah, good luck, buddy. But if he doesn't quite have a blistering free agent market, I think they could work something out for him to come back on a little bit of a team friendly deal. But fortunately, we don't have to worry about the offseason quite yet. The stage is set and we're counting down to the battle in Arizona. There's no better way to get ready for the NFL action than with DraftKings Sportsbook, official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 57. New customers can bet just $5 and get 200 in free bets instantly. Plus, all new and existing customers can take a shot at even bigger payouts with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. You know them, you love them, you've been doing them all year long. Boost your Super Bowl 57 winnings with each leg you add up to 100%. Now, obviously, at this point, this is a national ad, and so not all of these people that are reading this have a dog in the fight, but the Chiefs are in it. So go fire up your DraftKings app. Go put some money on the Chiefs, money on Mahomes. It's going to be a blast. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code TPPN. New customers can bet $5 on Super Bowl 57 and get 200 in free bets instantly only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code TPPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void in Ohio. See show notes for details. Fourth quarter, season-long scapegoats, Sky Moore, Harrison Butker, both come in, both do their job, save the day, sandwiched around the grittiest quarterback scramble in human history. Just like they drew it up, Chiefs are going back to the
bucket of guts.
Yeah, bucket, two buckets of guts, Mitch said at the end. Just kind of your final thoughts on the flurry of activity at the end of the game and how this thing ended up with the Chiefs on top in that fourth quarter.
Well, you know, first off, I have to say, you know, the Bengals had two drives in the fourth quarter that where they got the ball with the game tied. And honestly, both times I really felt like this was it, that they were just going to, you know, in the first case, I think there was it's like 9 minutes on the clock, but I just felt like they were just going to, you know, eat up the entire clock and move down the field and score. And then certainly when they got the ball back with, what, 2.5 minutes left.
Yeah, 2:30.
Even though, even though Tommy Townsend, always reliable Tommy Townsend, nice coffin corner punt. They got it at the 6 yard line.
Yeah.
And then of course, after the intentional grounding, 3rd and 16, and the Chiefs let him convert. I mean, you know, multiple points where I'm just like, okay, we're losing this game.
Yep.
And it didn't happen. And again, it didn't happen because Chris Jones just decided it was not going to happen. I mean, this was possibly the best game of his career. Sure. Certainly the one I will remember the most. Mm-hmm. One of the very few times that we can say without, you know, too much pushback that Patrick Mahomes probably was not the best player on the field in that game.
Yeah.
Which is fair. You know, not an easy thing to say, but he was hobbled and Chris Jones was the best player in this game. And I can't say enough about that guy. And I know, you know, the Chiefs will have some decisions to make about whether or not to bring him back. And, you know, I respect Veach's, you know, abilities to separate emotion from the job tremendously. And he made, I agreed with the move to trade Tyreek Hill, but
did you agree with it at the moment that it happened or did it take you a little bit?
Okay. I know. We talked about it. It took, you know, it was once the like initial shock wore off, you know, within hours, I'm like, you know, and I saw what we were getting. I'm like, you know, this makes sense.
I get it.
I don't know if I can get there with Chris Jones. I mean, of course I'd have to see what it would be, but you know, the difference is Tyreek Hill wasn't the most important player on the Chiefs offense.
Right.
Chris Jones is the most important player on the Chiefs defense. He is the guy that the entire defense is built around. So I struggle to come up with a package that it would take to justify moving him. And you know, if he wants more money, okay, well, the salary cap is going up like $16 million.
Yeah.
It just seems like a good place to put some of that cash.
Yes.
But we'll see where that comes in the future. But Chris Jones, all, you know, just what a game, what a performance when it absolutely was the difference between victory and defeat. So there's that. But then the last, you know, what, 39 seconds of the game was just like, it was Hollywood bullshit, guys. Like, one redemption story after another. I mean, the first thing was, when did you guys first notice that Sky Moore was returning punts?
Was back there. So I think he returned one. The first one he had was like the second punt of the game because it wasn't the first one, McColl, if I remember right. So they put him back there early, but I thought it was just because McColl was hobbled and then they were going to send in
so the first one is Kadarius Toney.
Oh, it was Toney.
The very first one.
That's right.
And the second one, I'm looking here. It was down. So I don't actually remember because we didn't attempt to return.
Right.
I cannot, and I can't remember who was back there now.
It must have been Hardman. I feel like it was Hardman.
I think it was Hardman. I think it was 21st. Then it was Hardman. I believe you're right. And so, according to the, I'm just looking at the play-by-play here. The first one where, Sky Moore fielded two. The first one was in the third quarter. Third quarter, That was the one Brian Cook was called for holding on the right. Punt anyway. But I remember seeing Sky Moore out there. Well, I remember seeing Sky Moore out there and just, you know, the immediate emotional reaction, like, what on earth? I'm like, if there was one thing we learned from this season,
don't put him back.
One thing you learned about the Giants, like, Sky Moore is not a punt returner. Like, he didn't do it in college.
Nope.
He was spectacularly unsuccessful at it during the season.
That's a kind way of putting it.
What on earth is he doing back there? And then it's like you go through it in your mind. You're like, okay, Tony is out. Mm-hmm. McCole Hardman is out. Mm-hmm. Justin Watson, not active for the game.
Yep.
And I'm just like, that's pretty much everybody who's returned punts this year. I'm like, I mean, I still wouldn't have put Sky Moore back there. I'm like, okay, I kind of see their point.
Right.
But it was just like, oh, dear God, what are they, you know, what are we doing? Like, just.
This is how we lose, care. Right?
Like, here, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been saying, not even specifically Sky Moore, but for at least the last month of the season, I think pretty much every Chiefs fan was like, we're going to lose a game in the playoffs because of our special teams. Like, that was the point at which we'd reached.
It will cost us. Yep.
And that's another thing we should, I briefly, a segue. You know, Dave Tobe has gotten a lot of crap this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are like, oh, you know, he should lose his job. And I've always just, I found that kind of weird because it's one thing if, like, a player suddenly, like Dan Sorensen is finally, yeah, he sucks. He's not cooked. Going to get better. He's cooked. He's an athlete, right? Like, there's an aging curve. Mm-hmm. Dave Tobe is a coach. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think he suddenly lost the ability to coach in 1 year. And I don't think he's going to get worse next year. Like, and his track record as a special teams coach is really, really good. Like,
phenomenal. Yeah.
It's like the Chiefs are like top 10 every single year, except this year. And I think 2020.
Yes.
And they were top five most of those years.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about how much turnover there is on special, how much just pure luck there is on special teams.
Right.
It's kind hard.
Of a small sample size too, right?
Yeah, like, exactly. There's not too many plays, a couple missed field goals and, you know, that's like there's stuff you cannot control. So the fact that he's been able to control those variables enough that they consistently rank in the top five is an incredible testament. He's an excellent coach. Are you telling me he's forgotten how to coach, or are you going to tell me there's something else going on here? Namely, Harrison Butker had a high ankle sprain his first week one of the season, and they employed some subpar kickers. Then he came back and he hasn't been 100%. But he looked the last 2 to 3 weeks, you know, maybe the last 2 weeks of the regular season and then the Jaguars game, like not only was he making them, but like he was starting to kick down the middle again.
Yeah.
And so I came into this game feeling, you know, like that was the other thing. A lot of people are like, oh, Butker sucks now. Get rid of him. I'm like, he's not bad. He's hurt. And I've seen him make enough kicks in pressure situations, and I have experienced enough historical trauma as a Chiefs fan from my kickers.
Yeah.
That
more than
I am
fair
not
share. Yeah.
Much more than our fair share, to the point where, you know, before Harrison Butker and more importantly, Patrick Mahomes, like the story of the Chiefs in the playoffs was betrayal by their kickers.
Yeah.
So the fact that I know that he has made in his career coming into this game, three times he's been called upon in the final seconds of a game, needing to make a kick to tie the game. All three were, I think one was 39 yards, one was 46, and one was 49, I believe.
The 13 seconds one, I think it was
49.
49, yep.
And he nailed all three of them. The Chiefs ended up losing two of those games in overtime.
Sure, sure.
But they did win. They won one. But the point is, like, you know, a game-tying kick where, you know, you miss a game winner and you go to overtime, you still have a chance to redeem yourself. You miss a game tire, you're the GOAT. It's over.
Yep.
You're the GOAT.
Yep.
And the fact that he's nailed all three of those, like, there is a mental component to kicking 100%. If anybody needs proof, go watch Brett Maher go try and make extra points for the Cowboys.
That was wild.
I mean, it's a reminder. It is an emotionally difficult job. And Harrison Butker, whatever it is that allows you to kick in the most high pressure situations, Harrison Butker proved to me over the last 5 years, he's got it.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, all I wanted to see was that he was healthy, and he looked like he was healthy coming into this game. So I felt pretty good about him. And then, of course, during the game itself, I mean, we can talk all we want about the final kick, but he had to make two other field goals in this game.
He
had to make, you know, two extra points, which this in Harrison Butker's case is not always a gimme.
No.
And all of those kicks were, you know, comfortably made. So that part of it, you know, I'm glad that at the end of this game, you know, I think Butker's position is potentially more secure, but I specifically want to see Dave Tobe. I think this game, it's ironic how the special teams ended up winning the game, but I think it's also a testament to Dave Tobe still knows what he's doing. And one of the reasons why the special teams will survive this year is there was so much turnover. There were so many rookies out there. Well, as we saw with the quarterbacks, rookies get better during the season.
That's right. Right?
So, you know, it's like all these guys are saying, we're not rookies anymore. And it's reasonable. They've played 17, you know, NFL games. That's a hell of a lot different than having played zero. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm really, you know, I'm glad that this game, I think, maybe takes the pressure off Tobe. I really think it would be a mistake to let the guy go after one bad year when he has a decade of success. But to bring this all back to Sky Moore, yeah, it was terrifying. He was out there, and my first thought was, okay, just don't fumble. Yeah, but that last kick, when they punted, my first thought was, gee, that looks like a low line drive.
Center cut, yeah.
And it was just, and I'm thinking to myself, like, if you know how terrified Chiefs fans were of Sky Moore returning punts, the last thing you would do is a low line drive, which allows him to catch the ball with nobody around him and plenty of time to move upfield. Like, you kick that high and short and make him come up, but like, then he's, you know, best case scenario, he's calling for a fair catch, and then he still has to catch it because he's had trouble actually catching it. So when that ball came down and I'm like, there's nobody within 10 yards of Sky Moore, I'm like, okay. I mean, you know, he's got time to secure it. If he fumbles it, he can still pick it up. But like, he's got time to secure it, and then okay, he's just in the open field. So that was a bad special teams move on the part of the Bengals.
Well, and it might have been because they were kicking an ice cube. I mean, it was so cold. That might have been a missed punt and not necessarily like they decided to kick it straight to him. And possibly. I mean, that's although also a testament to Butker.
It was a 54-yard punt. I mean, there's that too. I mean,
okay, yeah.
So yeah, it wasn't like it was far, you know. Yeah. I just the trajectory. I wouldn't have recommended that to the Bengals,
right.
But for him, you know, burst upfield and sort of edge toward the sideline, which of course I'm feeling great about because like if he fumbles,
at least it's going out. Yeah, right.
But yeah, it was just like from that moment he goes out of bounds, and that's the first moment in the second half really where I'm like, we're at, you know, I've seen Patrick Mahomes. You know, I've seen the 13-second game. I saw him with 31 seconds bring us back against the Patriots when he started, I think, at the 25. And there's 30 seconds on the clock, and we're at midfield. I'm like, yeah, this seems like a layup. And then finally, how poetic, you know, the quarterback on one ankle, unable to, you know, he's quote unquote scrambled a couple times in the game, but not really. And he saved it, like, you know, he's you see him motioning to the right, looking, and then at some point you're like, he's going for it. I've watched this guy. I know he's going to make it.
Yeah.
And he did. He, you know, to outrun a defender to get to the first down marker and the sideline. I mean, even before the penalty, it was just like, because it was third and four. If he doesn't get to the first down marker, that's a tough call because
I actually kick it talked there about or, it before that play, like what you would have to do in that situation. You almost have to punt it in that situation and play.
Because you can't miss a 60-yard field goal that you're probably never earned.
With
not even
30 seconds with 30 seconds left. You can't do that.
Right.
Well, there would have been eight. Well, when he stepped out, it was 8 seconds. So maybe you might have tried a crazy field goal, but like, and knowing that the Bengals will get the ball.
They get a play. They've got Jamar Chase and T. Higgins.
Right. And it would have, I think if it's 60 yards, they probably would have just punted it. Like,
right.
Because that would have ran out the clock.
Right.
So, he made it.
He always does.
And then the penalty, which, yes, I'm glad we haven't even discussed the officials here because was it a great officiated game? No.
No, it almost never is.
Was it a biased game? That's just laughable. It's just the idea, even if there were some questionable calls in the game, I don't know anybody who can seriously argue that the final rough in the passer call was inappropriate. I mean, was it unfortunate? Absolutely.
Sure.
But I mean, it wasn't, you know, I, and of course, you know, you'll always get the, the QAnon truthers of the Bengals fan base who will, you know, show the still photo of Asai touching Mahomes, like right on the right as he steps out,
Doug,
ignoring that there was a second touch.
Extending the arms, and yes. I mean,
but there was like two touches. It wasn't, I think, the first touch. I don't think that's what brought the flag out.
Well, Randy, that's why you shouldn't use still images to show football plays.
Yeah,
because
if the next person who shows me a still image to say holding,
yes,
when you get a punched in the face.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, when Bengals fans are arguing with Joe Thomas,
yes,
and the Schwartz brothers online about what constitutes holding.
Yeah, and they've never heard of a rip move before, and it's been rough. They've showed their asses a lot this week.
Those guys are offensive linemen. Of course, they're going to say it's not holding, right? Those right. guys are totally biased, sure, right?
Sure. And I mean, I get the emotional. You know, your team loses, you want to figure out every reason other than just we got beat, and like we've been there, you know, certainly. But I think Bengals fans have really cranked it up with like. Talking about, there are some people that wanted the like a halo around the sideline where you can still hit people out of bounds even after they're out because, oh, it's unfair to have to. I mean, just tons of stuff. It's been driving me nuts. I guess Bengals, I'm over them now. I think let's go ahead and put Cincy in our rearview mirror and let's move on forward. The Kelce Bowl, Andy Reid versus the Eagles, Nick Sirianni, former Chiefs coach, versus the Chiefs. You know, the Eagles are stacked on both ends of their offense and defensive lines. They got all pros all over the place. They were 16-1 in games started by Jalen Hurts. They've got two ridiculous wide receivers. I don't know if they're quite A.J. Brown. I mean, sorry, quite Jamar Chase and T. Higgins, but they're about as close as it gets in the NFL, and that's A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. Most metrics that I've seen have them in have a top five offense, a top five defense. They're like sixth in DVOA on defense and third on offense. It'll be a tall mountain to climb for the Chiefs, no matter what they do. How are you feeling about the matchup? Do you feel like it's house money at this point? Are you positive? How are the vibes?
I certainly wouldn't say we're playing with house money. I mean, I'm greedy. I want a Super Bowl win. A Super Bowl loss is, you know, yes, we got the Bengals off our back, and that narrative is hopefully put on ice for a time. Sure. But we're chasing Tom Brady here, and I want this win. But yes, this losing would still feel, I think, barring some sort of bizarre loss where the officials get involved, or you know, a big lead blown or something crazy like that. Like it would feel, I think, less bad than losing to the Bengals would have. In terms of how confident I am, I can't tell you right now until I know who's actually available for this game.
Fair.
Yep. Right. Like
long 10 days between now and then.
Yeah. It is. And thank God for the bye week. For many reasons. Right. So we're assuming Mahomes' ankle will be better. You know, he'll be more mobile. Probably, you know, not anywhere near 100%, but if he's even a little bit better than he was in the last game, we'll be fine in that regard. We're assuming Travis Kelce's back will not, you know, rear its ugly head again. He's, you know, been celebrating going to, I think, was it a KU basketball game the other day?
So,
like, you know, if he's hurting, he's doing a great job of disguising it. So I think at least, you know, the core guys are there. The word is Kadarius Toney sounds like he might be available. Like his ankle, Andy Reid seems to express some optimism there.
Agreed.
I certainly a very important guy to have, especially since it does seem like Hardman's out. But if you have one of those two guys, I think is key. The two questions I really have are, is Juju Smith-Schuster, where it's not entirely clear how serious his knee injury is. There seems to be some optimism he'll be able to practice next week. But then the other thing is L'Jarius Sneed. That's a head injury, and really there's no time frame that you can put on that. And certainly no desire on anybody's part to rush him back if he's not ready. You know, that's one you can do more real damage, lifetime damage. So we'll see where we are with that one. But if at least one of those two guys is available, and you know Tony is able to play, and I think that Willie Gay was missed some time, and Trey Smith, but I think those look like they'll be ready to go.
Yep.
Assuming everybody else is there, I feel reasonably confident.
Agreed.
The Eagles, it's weird. I will say this. Jalen Hurts is an interesting matchup only because he's not like any quarterback the Chiefs have really faced this year. They faced some terrific quarterbacks, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, but the guy who can, who has the kind, I guess Josh Allen is probably the closest comp, right?
Yeah.
Hurts, I feel like, is a different kind of runner. You know, where
more like Allen Lamar, can, right?
A little bit. Slippery and but at the same time, like, you know, he's got this like the incredible like squat numbers and like he's the guy that they can like he's kind of the rare quarterback where you actually use him for short yardage,
right?
For, whereas he's opposed to breaking off 30 yards, right? Yeah. I feel like, you know, he's not the guy you're going to get the 30 yard run broken off. But it's just like on third and two, they're like basically unstoppable.
Automatic. Yeah,
that's yep. It's a little bit weird, but. You know, their defense, you know, I think their secondary is, you know, matches up very well for the Chiefs, because the Chiefs may not have an elite wide receiver core, but they've got Patrick Mahomes. And I think their defensive backs are vulnerable. It's really, it's a line thing, you know, can the offensive line hold up against a
right.
better defensive line, I think, than the Bengals.
And thank God they're healthy. The offensive line. I mean,
that's the one thing. Exactly. That's, I think that's really a sign of just how important the O-line is, that like the Chiefs overcame all these other injuries in this game, but 2 years ago, they just could not overcome having a patchwork offensive line.
Right.
And yeah, those guys are, you know, they're in good shape. You know, it's funny. We talked last week about Orlando Brown, how the Bengals game might really define
his
legacy. Point. And I feel like it actually, he's still kind of in the middle. Like he played fine. He played fine.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, he maybe gets a little bit of a bad rep because he is next to Joe Tooney and Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith, all guys who are, you know, have a viable case to be among the top five or if not top three at their position.
Yeah.
And he's like maybe in the 11 to 15 range, like he's average to a little bit above, and left tackle is such an important position. Like, I think we would all trade a top five interior lineman for a top five left tackle protecting the most important commodity in all of American sports. This game will, you know, we'll kind of, we've punted that legacy onto the Super Bowl. If he can protect Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl and they win, I think, you know, we might see him back next year. But that to me is the key matchup on the line. The Eagles, that's no joke. But I think I feel like the Chiefs will be able to score points in this game.
Yes.
The other thing that gives me a little bit of confidence is, you know, I talk about how the Chiefs haven't really seen a quarterback like Jalen Hurts, but they've seen some really good quarterbacks. Have you guys seen the quarterbacks that the Eagles have seen this year?
Yes.
I mean, I went through
Mahomes.
The teams, if you just look at the teams they played,
they
played, I believe, two teams, I want to say all year, that won 10 games, right? They played the Cowboys twice.
And they're the Cowboys, so like.
And one of those games, they saw Cooper Rush instead of Dak Prescott.
Right.
And the other one was the Minnesota Vikings, who are the worst 11 or whatever, 13-4, right? But like, they were the,
you know, negative point difference.
The best team in NFL history record-wise to have been outscored. And as we, you know, as any analyst will tell you, the point differential matters more. And as the New York Giants will tell you, they'll tell you the same thing. So they faced a bunch of like 9 and 8 teams, but like all of those 9 and 8 teams, they played early in the year when they were all terrible. Like the Detroit Lions, they played to open the season. They played the Jaguars in week 4.
Yeah.
I believe it was they played the Commanders twice in week 3 and week 10, and
they lost
the Commanders in week 10.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, they beat the Colts by 1 point. So yes, we lost to the Colts, but that, at least for us, that was like an all time fluke. Whereas for them, it was they didn't do much better. So the schedule in general, like, was weak, but then you break it down to, okay, let's actually look at the quarterbacks they faced. And then you can talk about like their playoff opponents too, because I mean, if you just look at their playoff run, they outscored the Giants and 49ers 69-14. That looks incredibly impressive. But you consider that the 49ers, they saw Brock Purdy for like 3 minutes and then Josh Johnson. The best quarterback they saw this year, depending on what you think of Aaron Rodgers at this point, right? They did see Aaron Rodgers, but he had the worst year maybe of his career, and he's 40 years old.
And he put up numbers on him.
Well, he actually only played part of the game. Actually, he came out and Jordan Love played part of the game.
That's
Jordan
right.
Love played well.
And the Packers scored 30 points on?
We'll get to that, right? They saw the Cowboys twice, but only once did they see Dak Prescott.
Uh-huh.
And then the next best quarterback they saw was probably Daniel Jones. Right?
Which, I mean, you know, he's had a bit of a renaissance, but he's certainly still Daniel Jones.
Right. Or Jared Goff, maybe. And then you look at it, it's like, well, the Lions with Jared Goff scored 35 points. The Packers scored 33 points. Yep. The Cowboys, when they had Dak Prescott, scored 40 points.
Yep.
So they can't. That is interesting. Right. To me, like, yes, they allowed fewer points than the Chiefs on the whole this season. They allowed 20.2 points a game. The Chiefs have allowed 21.7. But when they have faced an, you know, a top tier quarterback, not even elite, but just like top 10, top five,
a respectable one. Yeah.
They have given up points. And, you know, in the playoffs, okay, you know, they kicked the Giants' butt with Daniel Jones, but, I'm still not entirely sold that Daniel Jones is a top 10 quarterback or even top 15. And then the Niners, you know, are a phenomenal team that just were unfortunately had an injury. Then we're down to their fourth string quarterback. Does that prove anything? I don't know if it does. And so, yeah, that is my reason for optimism. And, you know, I know that the Eagles are favored by the gambling lines here, and I don't gamble. I don't recommend anyone gamble, but like I don't see the argument in favor there unless you really think the Chiefs are even more banged up than it looks.
Randy, I promised that we'd circle back to this, and this is maybe an appropriate point to end on here. I mentioned that you alluded to this, but Dan Orlovsky, before the Bengals game, suggested that if Patrick Mahomes had lost the game on Sunday, we would have to crown Joe Burrow as the best quarterback in the NFL. And mind you, he did make a very nonsensical argument about Joe Burrow being the best quarterback and Patrick Mahomes being the best player, which, all right, let's leave that to the side because that doesn't make any sense. Instead, Patrick Mahomes won the game, and I don't know if you've had a chance to see this, but today, Dan Orlovsky proclaimed him as the second best quarterback of all time. Mm-hmm. So, considering he went from possibly the second best quarterback in the NFL with a loss to the second best quarterback ever on Sunday with a victory, any similarly hot takes you want to fire off in terms of the Big L legacy implications of this game?
If I recall correctly, could you tell me who Dan Orlovsky had as the third best quarterback of all time?
It was John Elway.
Okay, so I think we can automatically discount Dan Orlovsky's quarterback rankings.
This guy gets it.
The Elway over Marino. You know, we discussed this, I think, a little bit last week. Anybody whose opinion is that Elway was better than Marino is suspect in my eyes. Anybody who tells me Elway was better than Montana
is absurd.
Or Ken Anderson.
Or Peyton Manning.
Peyton Manning as well. But if you just want to look like at, you know, their contemporaries, Manning, you know, Montana had better numbers. Montana won more championships.
Mm-hmm.
What am I missing here? I don't know.
Well, you are not missing anything. Dan is missing.
Dan apparently is. So, you know, we'll... Like I said, I am so extremely grateful that we do not have to listen to people argue in good faith that Joe Burrow is better than Patrick Mahomes. I'm not going to worry about people arguing in bad faith that Joe Burrow is better than Patrick Mahomes or that anybody in football right now is better than Patrick Mahomes. We'll worry about where he stands on the, you know, historical comps in a few years, because that's very nice of Dan to say that he ranks second right now. I think from a, you know, projection standpoint, I think that's absolutely reasonable. But I look forward to the process of watching Patrick Mahomes make that case beyond the shadow of a doubt. And then it's time to focus on number one. But all in good time.
All in good time. Well, speaking of good time, Randy, we have had a blast talking to you about the Chiefs. Clearly, this is super, super fun for us, and we appreciate all your time. Hopefully, you know, the Chiefs make us all happy here in a couple days, and we can all celebrate ring number two out of eight for Patrick, and that would be a lot of fun. We'll catch up with you here, you know, before too long, but enjoy watching the game, and we'll tweet your article out whenever that comes out, if that happens to drop before the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And appreciate everything you've done.
Sounds good, guys. I look forward to hopefully talking to you guys in the not too distant future after a Chiefs Super Bowl victory.